Hello, this is Brian Wampler with another episode of the Chasing Tone Podcast, a podcast about guitars, amps, effects, as well as a healthy dose of interesting off-topic discussions. Joining me today is a bunch of people. We have Blake Weiland, who you probably all know from the Tone Mob podcast, Richard Oliver, who's my sideman and my best friend in the world here at Wampler Pedals, and we also have the one and only Andy Wood. You probably know who Andy Wood is, but just in case you don't, he's a solo artist, of course. He's done a million different projects. He's also been a sideman for every rock and country artist in the world, including like the Rascal Flatts. And you heard a few episodes ago, we talked about going down to Tennessee and doing this big, I don't know what you would call it. I guess it's not really a show.
Guitar experience extraordinaire.
Yeah, it's a guitar. It's not really a clinic. It was not that clinical, but it was more of a bunch of guys hanging out, playing music and talking about stuff. It's a lot of fun.
So, it's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being on here.
I'm looking at that diesel behind you right now going,
Yeah, that's right. If you look behind me, there's also the Masters amp, the EVH, some Sirs, a Bogner. The Bogner's new to the fold. I got a good deal on a Shiva, and that's always been one of my favorite sounding Bogner amps. So, yeah, I got a nice little stable of things to get loud with.
Nice.
So, speaking of EVH, of course, last week, literally the day after, might have been that afternoon, I forget, Blake, but after we recorded the podcast, we found out that Eddie Van Halen had passed away, sadly. So it was weird that we would have a podcast come out when the news hit, everyone was talking about Eddie and his passing and everything, and our podcast had nothing to do with Van Halen.
Yeah, it probably didn't have anything to do with anything, most likely.
I don't remember what it was either, but it would seem odd, but it's just because of course how we record these and we edit these, and all that process takes about a day. So it was a little bit late with what was going on in the world.
Yeah, it was literally the next day, because I saw some comments like, why did you guys not talk about, like, well, we recorded it yesterday. I'm sorry. He was still alive yesterday.
Yeah, so I wanted to get Andy on here because Andy is, I wouldn't say he's just an Eddie Van Halen mimic type of person, not at all, but some of the videos I've seen Andy do and I've seen firsthand him do, he completely nails that sort of feel and tone and even just the phrasing that he'll do whenever he's improvising things. Not that he's copying, but I've heard him intentionally try to do that Eddie sort of thing. And it's amazing. And he's really good at it. And I know he has some strong feelings about Eddie's passing and what Eddie meant to him. Because, I mean, to be honest, we were talking before we hit record, there would be no Wampler pedals at all, or really maybe even playing guitar without Van Halen. That was kind of the entire reason that I started everything up, is because I was trying to get that tone of Eddie Van Halen on the first couple of Van Halen albums. And I didn't have the amps and guitars, and I kind of foolishly thought, oh, well, then I just need to start buying guitar pedals. And that led me to building guitar pedals.
Which, ironically, is one of the most Van Halen things I think anyone could ever do. Build your own stuff.
Definitely.
Like, I know I'm getting deep already, but as you said, my feelings for Van Halen are immense. I did a short video last week that was just kind of a reaction video for my YouTube channel. And I got into a couple of things that I feel like really mattered, right, to me, as far as like the way I pay my bills these days, the way I pay my mortgage, the way I, you know, do my life is in a sense, it's all to Ed. And it's not because Ed was the first musician I ever heard. I grew up in a bluegrass household and mandolin was my first instrument. And a fellow Wampler artist named Brent Mason did a solo on Mark O'Connor's New Nashville Cats record. And it was called Pick It Apart. And that made me want to pick up an electric guitar and attempt electric guitar. Well, shortly after that, as in a couple of days, maybe a week or two, I went to the Disc Exchange, which is a local CD joint in Knoxville, Tennessee. And I bought the best of Van Halen, because I knew the name of Van Halen, but I didn't know any of his music. I'd only listened to Tony Rice and Sam Bush my whole life. And so the next day, after putting that CD in my Ford Escort GT, I went back
GT
to Disc
Escort. Yes.
Went back to Disc Exchange and purchased every Van Halen record. And he is the gateway drug musically that got me to Steve Morse, that got me to Eric Johnson, that got me to Chick Corea. Like, he is the guy that said, okay, country boy, there's more to music than just bluegrass and chicken picking and Western swing, because that's all I'd ever cared about. And Ed was the gateway drug to everything. So in a sense, it's really just Brent and Ed that I owe royalties to on everything that I do. And so when he passed, I didn't know how to feel. I was super thankful for the life that he gave us, but I was devastated. I mean, I sat down in my studio, cried my eyes out, and just didn't realize, you know, how much I owe to the guy. And all the licks or tricks or tones or anything that I'd ever chased over the years, it kind of always went back to, you know, to EVH and Brent. So thank you for the kind words about my impersonation, but that's really all it ever will be. All of us, the only thing we can ever hope for is a bad impersonation. I've always made the joke about Tony Rice and Eddie Van Halen compared to Elvis impersonators. Guys that play like Tony Rice, guys that play like Eddie Van Halen, none of them sound like Elvis, but they all sound like each other, you know? And that's right. How I feel about guys that play like Eddie Van Halen. None of us sound like Ed, but we all sound like each other.
So I got to ask you, Andy, I learned about four bars from Eruption when I was 16, and I've been dining off that for about 30 years. How long did it take you to learn Eruption? Because the version you did was pretty much perfect. How much time did you have to devote to putting that down?
I've been playing electric guitar for about 18 years now, and I still haven't got it right.
You got it.
The version you heard, which was right after Eddie's passing, I got the news in the afternoon from an inside source, and then I verified it via Wolfgang's Twitter as of 3 or 4 minutes. And I stayed up all night. I couldn't sleep. And the version you saw was recorded at about 5 a.m. And I took about 7 takes. And I didn't want to overthink it. I didn't want to do it. It wasn't for me to monetize, like the video's not monetized. You know what I mean? It was just for memory, just to do. And that's and I listened to it. You know, obviously, I listened to so much Van Halen all night long. Like, I just had all the records on. So I had that refresher of what it sounded like. But even in that version, there's a couple of little things that I've phrased. There's the staccato part that starts a little earlier. Like, the notes are right. I'm confident in the notes. But the staccato starts a little, like, two notes earlier than the version that I posted. But the reason I chose that take is I felt like the attitude was there on the bends and the sass. And that's one of the things that's really, really difficult to even kind of get in your head under your hands, is how to get it sassy, how to get the swing to swing, because Ed's got so much swung eighth in his lines and in his playing. So I thank you for that, Richard, but I still feel like I'm learning that piece. Every time I try to play it, I try to, you know, get it a little bit closer or whatever. But I mean, it's that thing, right? We'll always chase the tail of the dragon. But, you know, I've seen guys, I think everybody has a different Van Halen solo that they obsess over. A lot of people obsess over the Beat It solo. A lot of people obsess over Panama or Jump, maybe, because Jump's got that wicked swing in one of the lines that ascends over the B-flat pentatonic minor thing. It's like, again, it's that phrasing of the swing, right?
His phrasing was insane, absolutely insane. I mean, my guitar teacher is next to you, probably the world's biggest Van Halen fan. He will listen to nothing other than Eddie Van Halen is the greatest guitarist of all time, and it's difficult to argue with him. And he plays, I mean, he plays things pretty much note perfect, and it's amazing to hear. But it's all about the feeling. And like I say, the feeling you put into that that version you put online was absolutely spot on. Really, really enjoyed it.
Thank you, man.
And also,
thank you so much.
What a coincidence. My first car was also a Ford Escort.
That's funny.
But in the UK, it has a 1.3-liter engine.
Yeah.
And it's about half the size, right?
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned that about that video. If you look, the version that happened in a section that happens right before the tapping. It's the alternate trill pick where it jumps around on the strings a lot. I get really choked up. Like, I mean, you can see me like nod my head and like kind of cough a little bit. And the funny thing was, is that's the least choked up out of all the takes. Like, I ruined so many takes because I just started crying, you know.
The emotion came through, man. It absolutely, I shared it the minute I saw it because I was like, that's it, nailed it. And your words were spot on. So I thought it was a really, really fitting tribute. And it was a really strange day. Well, the sort of immediate 24 hours, because my page on Facebook just literally went red, white and black. Everybody was talking about Eddie. Everybody was putting tributes up there. Everybody was sort of sharing their favorite videos. And I've never seen, even, you know, when someone like Bowie, who very, very close to my own sort of heart, passed away, no one in my group really gave a damn. So it just passed. But with Eddie, with, you know, guitarists, bass players, even some of my drummer friends were posting stuff. So it was a really, really difficult but sort of special day in that weird way, I guess.
And thank God it was a break from all of the other BS that usually clouds Facebook, you know? I mean, it was the one thing is like, this guy touched so many people. It's like everybody turned off their opinions. Everybody turned off their politics, you know, and just plastered red, white, and black everywhere, you know? It was very fitting. I mean, when you think about it, Ed, not only from a playing standpoint, but from an engineering standpoint, he's got a lot in common with, say, Les Paul and the way multi-track recording came about because of Les Paul. Like, if you play a guitar that's a solid body with a humbucker or high-gain amplifiers, like this episode started with Blake commenting on the diesel amp, it's like there's no diesel without Eddie Van Halen. There's no Bogner. You could say what you want. Like, high-gain wouldn't exist if it wasn't for Ed. He had more in common with Henry Ford and Walt Disney and the Koch brothers than he did other musicians. You know what I mean? Right. He like revolutionized
engineering. He's actually got some patents out there. He patented a device that attaches to the back of a guitar that lets you slide a guitar right up to tap the fretboard. And it's like a kind of pivoting steel sheet thing. I was like, that's crazy. As well as a couple of other things. But yeah, I can't think of many other guitarists that have patents out there other than, as you say, the likes of Les Paul.
I mean, like, Ed didn't patent the Floyd Rose, but by God, there'd be no Floyd Rose without Ed. Yeah, you know?
Right. Yeah, for sure. I mean, at least from my perspective, I didn't even really think about any sort of tremolo system until listening, you know, deeper into Ed's stuff and thinking, how is he bending and getting everything to pop back in tune? Because every time I do, it's a completely useless guitar afterwards.
Yeah. I mean, those first Van Halen records, too, were Fender tremolos. Let that sink in. You know, how the crap did he play Eruption on a Fender tremolo that didn't lock, you know? And thank God for Ted Templeman putting it on, you know, like, hey, yeah, we got to get that. We got to record that, you know? And he didn't want to. He's just like, it's something I'll warm up with, you know? And so I think, Richard, what I said online was 1 minute and 42 seconds. That's all it took for a Dutch immigrant kid with a homemade guitar to change the world.
What I found so amazing is how everybody was impacted. It didn't matter what genre the musician or the person was talking about. Everybody was impacted. I'm even thinking, like, my roots, I've talked about a little bit. I'm like from this, you know, early 2000s Warped Tour generation, and half of those guys are playing 5150s, you know, in the metalcore scene and all that stuff. And all of those guys, and everybody was impacted by this so strongly, including myself. That I said when I posted something about it, that Eddie's the first person I heard and went, you can do that with a guitar? Like, that's a thing you can do? I didn't even understand it. I didn't even realize what I was hearing, that a guitar could actually make sounds like that.
That's a great point about the Warped Tour stuff. Like, I know one of the guys from Weezer, mega Van Halen fan. He's also a Knoxville boy. One of the guys from Fall Out Boy, the pop punk band, like super, super Van Halen aficionado. And it's like you said, it's like just because you didn't play like Ed or write those kind of songs or those kind of solos didn't mean it didn't affect you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I really do think he hit everybody. I mean, my dad is a traditional country fan, and I was like, dude, Van Halen died. And he was like, what? So yeah. And he immediately, everybody just goes back to, like, there's a time before you heard Van Halen, and then there's a time after, and everything's different. It just completely changes.
It's like the Henry Ford thing. There's a time before the automobile, and there's a time after. Like, that's Ed on the landscape, you know? It's like, you look at the electric guitar, it's like Charlie Christian, you know, Chuck Berry was a pretty big spike. Hendrix was a Mount Everest, and Ed is the only other Mount Everest we've had. I mean, I'll go on record. If everybody hates me for saying that, so be it. But it's not spiked up since then. I think Guthrie Govan is one of the most terrifying guitarists on the planet. And if we were invaded by aliens and our life blood, our existence depended on a guitar duel, I'd be like, put Guthrie in. Like, put him in. But with that said, there's no Guthrie without Ed Van Halen.
Right.
You know?
No one can deny his influence at all. And the thing that my good friend John always tells me is, name a better debut album than the first Van Halen album. You know, 1978, I was 3 years old. People were still listening to, you know, the music of the 60s and the 70s back then.
And ABBA. ABBA right. was on the radio.
Right. Careful, Brian might get upset if you diss ABBA. So just, you know, watch it with the ABBA disses, right? But you think about that, 1978, that album... there's one or two tracks on it that aren't my favorite, but every single one is solid, absolutely innovative and ridiculously well-crafted for its time. Absolutely no doubt. And I think, you know, the argument is very much maybe Led Zeppelin's first album is on a par as far as...
I'd put that up there.
Debuts go. Maybe Are You Experienced is as well, but... You know, Van Halen's first album is absolutely up. And I'd agree with you. Since Hendrix, nobody has moved boundaries as much as Van Halen did, I think, in 70. I think, as you say, a few have come along since. Hendrix was what turned me onto the guitar, and Van Halen just blew me away in the 80s, no doubt.
That's right. And when you talk about the first record, you have to talk about how Van Halen 1 and 2, even though they were released a year apart or whatever, it's like they're still the same sessions. Ted and Don recorded all this stuff at the same time. Like, I may have a couple of details off, but in one of the famous Ted interviews, he says, Don and I we had 2.5 hours, and the boys came in and cut 26 or 28 songs. I forget the exact number. You could look it up. But the interview's like, yeah, they cut 26 songs in a couple of hours. And Ted and Don, I forget which way the conversation went, but one of them looked at the other and goes, well, we've got a band that can really F and play, you know?
I didn't realize that all those songs were cut at the same time.
So I don't know what made it from that session to each record. And obviously there was another set of sessions for Van Halen too, but the interview is a Ted interview. And he talks about how they cut all those songs at the same time. Now, who knows which versions are masters and what got written after. Like, it gets into, like, you have to be a fly on the wall thing. But, you know, it went from Gene Simmons with those Zero demos that you can Google and hear the first versions of, what is it, Fire or whatever. And then you can hear the way it ended up on the record. And that's always a great, great way to go. What does a producer do? When somebody doesn't know what a producer does, listen to the, what is it, On Fire or whatever from Zero, and then listen to the one that made it to the album. And that's what Ted did. That's what Don did. You know, they just captured the lightning. You know what I mean?
Yeah, one of my favorite things to do, after I found a bunch of these isolated tracks from like Guitar Hero games, Rock Band games and stuff. And the first thing I did, I downloaded everything. The first thing I did is I separated all the Van Halen stuff out, and there's a bunch in there, and just spent probably almost an entire week just listening to every little piece of the isolated guitar. And it was fascinating because you hear little bits and pieces that you don't hear in the cloud of the music. And some might argue that that's not really how it was intended to listen to. But as a guitar player, and I would call myself more of a hyper nerd, I wanted to hear those little bits and pieces. I wanted to hear the little screw ups and, just the little things that you don't generally hear in the context of an entire song. And even still today, there's times that I'll just throw that on as background music while I'm doing something else rather than the whole Van Halen song. I just want to hear the guitar part.
It's perfectly imperfect, right? Like yes. Ed's bobbles. There's a lick that happens. Richard, go back to, you were talking about Eruption and the depth that I've taken the obsession. There's a lick that's like a whole tone lick that just doesn't make a lot of sense. And you can tell that Ed was just going for it. And what ended up, the thing is he had this way of like hitting something that the rest of us would bail on and end the cut and say, that wasn't, it's like, and he had a way of capturing it, twisting it and turning it and making it the only way you would play that. Yeah. Same way with like, how do you control the pitches and the speeds of dropping the bar and the way you bring it back and finding all the harmonics, like something like Mean Streets, that's just got all these like, perfect little imperfections and solos like Hot for Teacher. You can actually hear that's one of the only solos that I can recall in Van Halen Obsession where you can hear where the cut is, the punch in, because back then they were cutting tape with razors, but that you could tell like, hey, let's take the front of that one, the back of that one. Cool. Done. And apparently that's just how Ed liked to record. Hit record, go fire off a couple of takes and done, And I'd love it if Ed's inspiration spawned more of that style of playing guitar these days, because we've gotten so obsessed with logic and putting things on the grid that I feel like if you've ever put on any of those songs to a metronome, they don't line up. They're not gridded, It's like, they played to a click, but it wiggles. It's like, that's beautiful.
Right. It's like a living and breathing thing versus a very static, mechanical thing.
Yeah. And that leads into a good conversation about, like, we talk about Eruption, we talk about the solos a lot, but the way Ed plays rhythm, too.
Yeah.
The way he, like, attacks it and chops at it, it's like, you can tell, like, just listen to, anything, really. I don't even know which example I was going to throw out there. But I think of the, I've been to the edge, and you listen to the way the song flows back and forth. It's like, it's unreal that that's one guy.
it's also awesome that they didn't multi-track the crap out of those sessions. Mm-hmm. They were just like, put Ed dry on one side, put his reverb and delay on the other side. There's your mix.
Right.
Put the bass player in there, drop David Lee in, there's the mix. And it's like, it's crazy. And like occasionally he would overdub a solo. Like I think there's one on I'll Wait from 1984. Where he overdubs the solo, but most of it's just like he plays the whole time, And it's just like his rhythm is incredible. His swag is swinging the rhythm. And the way he is a bit Hendrix-y in that he's kind of always playing rhythm and always playing lead simultaneously, mm-hmm.
And he feels the guitar like Hendrix did. You can just the harmonics that just smoothly come out when he's playing those sort of rhythm chops. He's feeling everything he does. The guitar is absolutely an extension of his body, exactly like Hendrix. And it's a very rare musician that's like that, but impossible to copy. Absolutely impossible to copy.
Yeah, for sure.
And the world is definitely going to be a worse place without his music, although I know he wasn't particularly productive in his later years in terms of recording, but...
I'm
gutted I never got to see him.
I think the pictures, and I've buddies with Pete Thorne and Dave Friedman, some of those guys, and they say that it's just walls of ADAT tapes and recordings inside 5150 of stuff that never got released. Just walls.
Wow.
So who knows what all's in there? Will it see the light of day? Will it not? I mean, and I have to be honest, like I'm a huge Van Hagar fan. Huge, yeah. Massive, like For Unlawful Carnal Knowledge is one of my favorite records of all time. Like Ed's tone on the live right here, right now, not the Without a Net, the one where they're doing like Pound Cake and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Like that tone, especially the baritone tone on Spanked, is unbelievable. He was one of the first guys I ever heard do the, you know, little bit of pitch down, little bit of pitch up to get that really wet sounding guitar tone that wasn't, it wasn't just delay and reverb. It was wet in a brand new way, you know?
Right. Then everyone tried to copy that, at least from an effects point of view.
Absolutely.
Everyone was detuning everybody. Every guitar.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I mean, just he worked so closely with so many engineers. And the, you know, find one amp guy or manufacturer that had bad things. Apparently everybody loved to work with the guy because he just loved making stuff, you know, and that is a, as rare a quality as it is being an extension of the instrument. Like you very rarely in life see people with such passion. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. And that totally comes through in his performances too. Who else played live like he did? We were talking about the recording process a lot and all that. And that's, he had all of it. He was an amazing player, amazing performer, extremely passionate about the instrument. I mean, you watch these old videos of him, and it's like, man, he's soaring through the air while doing all this stuff as well. It's unreal.
Literally soaring through the air.
Yes, yes. It's a crazy that a human being can accomplish everything that he did and affect so many people so deeply. I was crying. I was taken aback. I like Van Halen. Was huge for me when I first started listening to the electric guitar, but admittedly, he wasn't like the driving force for me during my formative years or anything. I was taken aback at how deeply sad I was about his passing and how, like, really thinking about how deeply he impacted the musicians that really did impact me. And like, wow, I wouldn't be talking to you guys right now. I never would have met Brian if it wasn't for Van Halen, you know, like so much of my life wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for Ed. And I'm not even like you, Andy, you're like directly impacted. I was like more indirectly impacted, but my life would be, who knows what it would be. It wouldn't be as fun. I can guarantee
none of us
you
would
that.
Be sitting here having this conversation on the internet without Ed. I mean, I can confidently say that.
Of course.
Oh, one of the coolest moments in my life, we were on tour with Flats and, we were playing in Arizona, Scottsdale, and the night before we were playing at one of the arenas, Ed was playing. It was 2015, and it was towards the end of the tour because they were wrapping up in L.A., right? And so they invited us to come see the show. I didn't get to meet Ed, you know, anything like that, but it was great. And the next night we were playing the same arena, and before the you know sound check or whatever, my guitar tech's going down where they had put the gaff tape markers for Ed, and he was getting ready to start ripping them up off the stage and put down my markers, you know, and the flat Rascal Flatts stage markers. Mm-hmm. And I told him, I said, Mark, just leave them down. And for one moment in my life, I got to look down at an arena and stand on my hero's ex where I just watched him play the night before. And dude, I cried on stage that night.
That is so cool.
You know, it's just like, it's in everything that I freaking do. Brian, I play the Pinnacle and I love that circuit. And you built that pedal kind of as a Van Halen thing. And that has become a source of, it's like everything I do, I owe the Van Halen family royalties on literally everything that I do.
Right. Yeah. And the whole reason for that pedal was because, again, I was trying to chase that tone. Yeah. And I was like, why can't I get this tone in anything? And eventually I figured out a lot of it has to do with talent.
Oh, that's
I was missing
the problem.
Huh. That core component to the whole thing.
What's the one in the first Iron Man movie? He says Tony Stark built this in a cave with scraps and goes, I'm not Tony Stark. It's like, not Ed Van Halen.
This is it.
Every rig, every amp, it doesn't matter. He always sounds like Ed Van Halen, you know?
Yeah.
This has developed into my philosophy for buying guitars now, because I'll watch a demo. I'll be like, I really want this guitar. And then I'm like, but I'm not going to sound like that when I play it, right? So I'll just move on. And there's no point in trying to sound like Eddie Van Halen. It's you can get the tone right, but you can't get the tone right, if you know what I mean. It's just
But it sure
impossible.
Is fun to try.
Oh, and like I say, I've been dining out on my two-fingered tapping from eruption really badly for many a year. When I was 16, I thought I was the man for pulling that off. I didn't even know what it was from. My guitar teacher, who was a buddy of mine, just said, hey, try this. And I played that for years thinking, yeah, I'm there. I've got this sussed. Wow, how wrong was I?
The passion, though, and like I guarantee you this week has had more people sitting in their house playing Van Halen riffs.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen any stats on this, but I bet there's been more downloads of and streams of Van Halen stuff than, you know, many,
many
years.
Oh, I'd love to see the iTunes Spotify stats this week.
Yeah, I bet it's just absolutely crazy, which is a fantastic thing.
I hope so, yeah.
I mean, hopefully, I always like to try to find a positive. Maybe, just maybe, this past week spurred some younger kid or girl or, you know, maybe some older person or whatever, and they go on to create music, and they become the next, I wouldn't say next big thing, but maybe it becomes part of a bigger movement that brings music back around. I mean, me personally, man, I there's still a lot of days where I just listen to older 80s and, Van Halen era music that says something a lot more to me than a lot of the stuff that I hear coming out.
Not you don't like Cardi B?
it's okay to hang out with and just chill with, but it doesn't drive me into wanting to design a pedal like Van Halen stuff does. So,
if you ever do the WAP pedal, I'll be very curious as to what that thing's going to sound like.
Oh my god, this literally came up today when we were designing a pedal, and I put a label on it. And Jake went, are you trying to make a WAP pedal? I was like, can you please explain? I don't know what it is.
It's the Wampler analog pedal.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, what, wireless access protocol? What's that all about?
Wampler analog pedals. That's what we are. Yeah. WAPs. Yep.
It's not a good acronym.
So you're saying we shouldn't post that on Facebook then, huh?
No, I absolutely will endorse that post. I for sure will.
I think it'll go better on Instagram.
Yeah. Probably so.
Yeah.
Maybe a little TikTok action.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, I mean, friend of both the Tone Mob and Wampler, Nick Scott, and I believe Pineapple on Pizza enthusiast too, posted something along the lines of every single Eddie Van Halen model guitar is basically sold out at the moment. You can't just go and pick up a nice Wolfgang anymore or a Frankenstrat or whatever. I don't know whether any of you guys have seen whether that is the case. I had a quick look and I couldn't get one locally. So
yeah, I actually tried to buy one of the red and white ones that EVH was doing and couldn't get one. But I did read some very good news on that front, is that Wolfgang will be manning the helm of the manufacturing company.
So that's awesome.
That is. You couldn't, I mean, it's got to be in the family. It has to be.
Yes.
And nobody knows that music inside and out like Wolfie. There's actually interviews of Ed forgetting how he did something, and Wolfie went back and be like, oh, Dad, I think you did. It's like, there's some really heartwarming stuff
really?
Out there. Yeah, when it was the tour that I'm talking about. You know when they did that? I think it was 2014, 2015, or it was 15 and 16, whatever that one was. That's the last live run.
Mm-hmm.
They were playing a bunch of old stuff. Like deep cut stuff, you know?
Right.
And Ed talked about how he was so thankful that Wolfie could show him how to play some of the riffs again. I thought that was so, just so beautiful, you know?
That's amazing. And it's going to be, I don't know. I'm hoping that maybe at one of these NAMMs, if they ever have one again, maybe I can meet Wolfie. I never got a chance to meet Eddie. I know our good friend Dave Friedman spent a lot of time working with him and developed a lot of rigs with him. Ed was one of those people I always wanted to at least meet, you know. I mean, wanted to work with him for sure, but if I could just meet him once, that'd been cool too, you know.
But it's also like at that point, it's like, man, there's a part of me that wanted to meet him, and there's a part of me that's a tiny part of me that's glad I never did. It's like, it's almost like Herculean or mythological, or it's like, was he ever really even here? It's like the legend is greater than the, you know, and I think there's a special place in your heart when you don't get to meet somebody. Definitely. And I am like you, Brian, I like to put a positive on it. It's like, I would have loved to meet him, but there's also this side of me that's like eternally like, oh man.
Never meet your heroes.
Did King Arthur ever really, you know, did he ever really pull his Excalibur out of the stone, you know?
I think that's how Blake felt about meeting me. He's like, you know what? I think I was better not really meeting you, Brian.
Yeah, I regret it every week because I had to do this thing. No, like in the interest though of positive things, I can tell you one positive thing for sure that came out of it. Last week was the first time that my son heard Van Halen. I was like, wow. You've never heard Van Halen. I was like, we got to fix this. You know, he's only five, but still. Like, I was like, you know what, buddy? We're going to listen to some Van Halen right now. He's like, who's Van Halen? I'm like, yeah, you're going to find out. We're going to turn this up.
Grab your sippy cup and sit for a minute.
Yes. Yeah. So, he was like, wow, all right, this is cool.
So did he have a favorite Van Halen song or moment?
He looked like he was particularly into Eruption, but I think that's, you know, because we played it like six times. So, you know, that could be, you know, a little bit of pattern recognition going on there. We'll see. We'll see what ends up sticking. I know Eruption was the big one for me because I remember having my friend be like, you know, I knew of Van Halen. I had heard of the name Van Halen before.
The legend.
Yeah. And I was like, I don't know anything about Van Halen. And he's like, you don't know Van Halen? He's like, let me show you Eruption. And so and from then on, that's what I was talking about earlier when I was like, you can do that on a guitar? So I was still trying to figure out a G chord on an acoustic at the time. So, you know, I think that's pretty mind-blowing for anyone. So I felt like that was a good place to start with my son.
Well, what was your favorite record, Blake, after you got into Van Halen? Do you have a favorite record?
No, I was definitely that guy who just had the best of.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that was what I would, you know, because I was heavily into my punk phase by that point. And so I would just put on the best of record and just go through it. So I just kind of hit the highlights. I never got into the deep cuts and things, but I'm thinking I need to fix that.
Same here. I mean, when I first really heard Van Halen, we're talking 87, 88, I was listening to kind of a lot of Iron Maiden, Anthrax, things like that. And I had a friend come over from America and he introduced me to Motley Crue, Poison and Van Halen. And he and his brother, who were very, very good friends of mine at the time, were just obsessed by that whole Van Halen sound. And yeah, it stuck. And back then you couldn't just go into a shop in England, and I lived in a really small town in the middle of nowhere with like a record shop with 40 CDs in it and get a Van Halen record. So I had to rely on tapes and, you know, whatever I could get hold of. And then when I finally got the albums, I was like, I know every track. They've just been played on every rock show and on every compilation. So, yeah, they're kind of ubiquitous, man. They're brilliant. But more importantly, Blake, did you master that G chord?
No, I'm still trying to figure that out. I said I got heavily into my punk phase, and I never really left it. So I'm still trying to figure out what chords are. I'm not sure what they are. So,
Brian, did you have a favorite Van Halen record?
My favorite? Probably Van Halen 2. I think so. I love a lot of the lick bass stuff or the solo bass stuff, but what I really love is the way he would come up with rhythms and the chewiness of the rhythm. I'm a sound person, you know? So like I'm thinking of what's like Beautiful Girls, just the chewy texture of that crunch is that, like that's what I'm thinking. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like that sort of texture, I just keep going back to that's the whole reason why I even started making guitar pedals. Because that's, I couldn't get it out of my Crate G40, you know?
Oh, yeah. They weren't in my PV Bandit either, funny enough.
But it's fantastic. Yeah, so I would probably say Van Halen too, but there's other stuff that I really loved.
For sure.
Like Finish What You Started, even though it's not a traditional Van Halen thing.
Oh, it sounds like Van Halen's take on Albert Lee.
Yes, it's Eddie Chicken Picking, right?
Yeah, man. Yeah. That's one of my favorites. I think my favorite record would be 84. I know that's probably the most uncool thing to say as a guitar player, but it's got the biggest of the radio polished hit, and it's got the swag nastiest of the nasty with like Girl Gone Bad and House of Pain. Yeah. Like that's probably my favorite way any Van Halen record kind of rides off into the sunset, is just as mean and dirty as you can get it.
For me on that album, it was Drop Dead Legs. I always, I plug into my SLO 30 and it's Drop Dead Legs, the first leg I play, you know?
Yeah, dude, that's a good one. Oh, man. And you know, there's one thing that was really cool is like we were always looking on every Van Halen record for the next big solo, because every album would have some monolithic moment of guitar. Spanish Flies on two, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Cathedrals on Diver Down. It's just like every Mean Streets. Was that on Fair Warning? I think it was on Fair Warning, right?
I think it was Fair Warning.
Yeah, I think it is.
Was it that or Women and Children First?
One of those. Yeah, it's one of those two. And I think it starts Fair Warning, I think. But yeah, it's like every Van Halen record always had some brand new, well, how the hell did he do that? You know? Like the playing between the delays, the first time I heard that done was John Jorgensen on the Helicasters. It's the Orange Blossom Special. Mm-hmm. Then I traced that back to Nuno Bettencourt and his way of doing the Flight of the Wounded Bumblebee or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then I traced it back and it's like, oh, Ed did this on Cathedral and used a volume knob. It just wasn't at like lightning speed.
Right.
You know, it was more like a pretty ballad thing. I'm checking the albums to verify, see which one it was on. Let's see.
While you're doing that, Brian, I think we've all talked about like our first Van Halen moment, but I don't know what was yours.
Well, my brother who doesn't play guitar, he's the one that actually got me into Van Halen. He was a huge fan, and I remember being, I was probably six. So I was little, and he would just play Van Halen and Scorpions and a few things like that, just over and over and over. So it kind of got drummed into me at a young age, like, this is what music is.
Yeah.
And then the 80s happened, and like all the pop that goes along with it that now is cool, but at the time I thought it all kind of sucked. And so I just kind of kept listening to like the guitar based stuff. And then all the more poppy keyboard type stuff, I really didn't like that much. As time has gone on, I've kind of went back and tried to re-listen to some of it. And I still like the guitar stuff, to be honest with you. But I mean, there wasn't really like one moment. It was just my older brother saying, "Here you go. I know that you have a guitar. You should try to learn to play this." I'm like, "But Jim, I'm 6 years old. I barely hold a pick."
Yeah, it is Fair Warning, to go back to that. Verify. Mean Streets is the opening track to Fair Warning.
I just had this weird flashback moment to this time as a teenager where I was in a warehouse, in a dental supply warehouse, up in a scissor lift doing some painting. And I was hearing this song, and again, this is like right as I started listening to more of my own music and like had heard Eruption at this point and was pretty familiar with Van Halen in general. But this song came on and I'm like, "What is this?" And then later in it, there was a monster solo and I was like, "Well, that sounds like Van Halen," but because it was kind of playing in the back of the warehouse and it was Jump. And I was like, I remember hearing that keyboard riff and being like confused, like, what are we listening to here? Because it was not, I couldn't hear it really well. But then I heard the solo and I thought, that sounds like Van Halen. And then like a couple months later, I figured out what Jump was. The internet wasn't a thing at the time, so it took me a little bit of research. But I just remember that moment in the warehouse sweating and painting and being like, what is this sound? And even then it was like, I could still pick out Eddie shredding.
Yep. All right, well, gosh, we're 45 minutes into this.
We'll wrap this up.
Any last words from anyone before we close this?
Long live the king.
Yeah.
Yep.
So thank you for listening to the Chasing Tone podcast. As always, if you have any comments, questions, or concerns, you can email podcast@wamplerpedals.com, and I'll personally get your email. To email Blake, just simply go to info@tonemob.com, right, Blake?
Got it. You got it.
If you like this podcast, make sure to share it with your friends, bandmates, others into Guitar Gear Podcast. To check out Andy's stuff, Andy, what's the best place for someone to check out? I mean, I know you got an Instagram and Facebook, and you got a YouTube. Like, you got everything.
AndyWoodMusic.com, and then, of course, any other social media that you're into.
There you go. And make sure you check out his videos on YouTube for sure, because they will leave you speechless as well. Andy's a fantastic player. If you've never heard of him, but I'm sure you have. So thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.